including Minister of Finance. I'd like to just extend our apologies for our chairperson of our finance working group. She's unable to attend due to commitments and challenges at a local municipality in Madiveng. Chair, I'm doing the presentation on behalf of the chairperson. Chair, we have had a brief discussion on this report. We took to the National Executive Committee, so in fact, fortunately, we've got some sort of feedback from our NEC as well. The key areas I'm going to cover is just some general comments on the 2010 MTF, just some general comments on the direct and indirect grants, infrastructure grants, capacity building, and the DORA clauses. Chair, the first point that I think we just want to make is that the 2010 budget provides an important support for local government to sustain its service delivery as the economy starts to recover. And I think the budget was quite clear around the point. In terms of our understanding, the additional funding that is made available for local government is essentially for free basic electricity increase in prices. It doesn't really cover additional sort of services. It's really just the price increases, eradication of infrastructure backlogs, provision of bulk water and sanitation, and fast-tracking of water and sanitation in rural areas. Some of our concerns that we were just want to put on the table in general first is that the growth in equitable share of 15% over the next 3 years is only towards continuing current levels of service, given the high increase in bulk water, bulk price of electricity. And so we're not sure how, maybe as we begin engaging on reviewing the formula, that the figures will have to substantially change. Because we'll have to look at other services and other aspects of the formula. The funding need for local government is enormous, and municipalities with low revenue-raising capacity require further fiscal support to broaden service delivery in generally poorer municipalities. Smaller municipalities also, they struggle to maintain institutional capacity for effective local government and administration. I think the challenges that the members alluded to in Northern Cape is typical of us. However, it's really not about playing musical chairs, because while smaller municipalities are struggling, larger municipalities are also facing increasing growth and backlogs because of for various reasons, including migration. And if you look at the financials of the big cities now, they are all beginning to reach the max in terms of the gearing capacity. So there's not much gearing capacity for them to go and borrow, and so the fiscal pressure is beginning to rear its head in across all municipalities in the country, we think. Only a limited number of poorer municipalities, we think, will benefit from the DBSA loan funding. Because this is loan funding, and if particularly your B4 rural municipalities, that option is not available to them, and it's just a comment we want to put on the table. Because in the budget statement, that point was emphasized, that this funding is available, but it's not. I think we need to just be a little circumspect about that. The vertical share of local government revenue from the division of revenue between the three spheres should take into account the constantly increasing demand for services and the full cost thereof. And the need for local government is enormous, and I think we've made the point. Direct transfers, our understanding direct transfers are made from a national or provincial department into the primary bank account of a municipality, and that's what we understand as a primary and the equitable share in the conditional grants are typical of them. The conditional grants are application based, at particularly in terms of the condition. Yeah, in terms of conditional grants over the MTF. Some of the challenges, however, is that not all municipalities are aware of the relevant application processes, and I think the point was made early on by the chair, actually, that a lot of these grants, particularly in the rural areas and outlying areas, I mean, they actually not aware of, or they don't even have the capacity to develop an application. Just to cite an example, I mean, one of the chairs of our working group actually indicated that she asked the municipality to put an application for the NDPG grant. And they didn't have the capacity, and eventually she got an NGO in her area to actually put in an application. So, I mean, you need capacity to develop some of these complex business plans and proposals that you need to put together. Municipalities must be supported to institutionalize the key components, key management processes resulting from participation in the conditional grant programs, and monitoring processes should be streamlined to ensure efficiencies in the grant management. In terms of indirect transfers, I mean, and I'm just going to go quickly to the key points. We think that we need to indicate in the IDP as projects that are benefiting to the municipality. So, for example, the solar projects, and there's three municipalities that have been targeted there. It's important that those municipalities reflect those projects, and that there's communication between the national department and the municipality in this regard. It must reflect in the municipal budget as a benefit and not just as a fundable budget. And the implementing national department and public entities must streamline management of these grants, again, with municipalities. Poverty lines, these are just some general concerns we've raised on the equitable share, which we think we need to take into account going forward. The poverty line, agreeing on what's the poverty line, expanding the basket of basic services, and dealing with the issue of data sources. In terms of just generally the infrastructure grants, the real growth of 7% in infrastructure grants is welcomed. We think that this will fast-track the eradication of backlogs and support economic growth. We, however, think that there's a need for alignment of infrastructure grants to cities, and we think there's a need for focused national funding solutions to support the DPSA loans to smaller municipalities. Some of the specific concerns is that we need to link, these funds or the infrastructure grants to real backlogs, and we're not sure if that's currently the case. We need to increase capital spending, but we're not, it's an age-old issue that's been put on the table, and I mean, I'm not really convinced if equitable share is the answer to operation and maintenance requirements. So if municipalities we're substantially increasing the MIG capital spending, even in the most rural municipalities, but we're not sure if the operational maintenance costs are available, since those municipalities in many cases only have very little of their own revenue raising capacity. And the figures will show that. Lack of technical capacity, I think the point has been made. Lower appetite for borrowing, and the reporting burden and the costly and time-consuming reporting burden. There are 13 different grants that we counted in 7 different departments. So if you're a little municipality and you want to access these grants, there are 13 grants you're going to have to manage and engage with 7 departments around. And we think that this is how the process becomes quite cumbersome for many municipalities. And then to add to that, there's no coordination again then between the provincial grants and the municipalities. So then that municipality is also then required to engage with the provincial departments, when those transfers come through, and then to report against all of that. So I mean, if you put the whole picture together, it does become quite cumbersome for a particularly smaller municipalities. I think the reporting burden for larger municipalities with big budgets and big transfers, I mean, should definitely be in place. Some comments on very specific grants. Yeah, I'm not going to go through them in detail. The rural transport services and infrastructure grants, these comments we took from last year, and we think they still hold. There's no, again, alignment to MIG. We're not too sure how it links to the overall rural development strategy. Currently the department is implementing these pilot sites on rural development, but how does this link to that? We're not too sure. The rural household infrastructure grant, it's a similar point. Again, how does this link to the various strategies and backlog processes. In electricity demand side management, we're saying that DISCOM should be focused on all municipalities. The issue of demand side management is not just for those municipalities who provide electricity. I mean, even if you're a municipality that doesn't provide electricity, you can still be putting in place demand side management measures, even in terms of your own municipal services. So, in terms of the INEP, we need to shift towards investment in renewable energy sources of energy, solar and wind. And we think that point hasn't really been emphasized. INEP is still broadly seen as just investment in electricity infrastructure. And allocation to ESCOM should be accompanied by a condition that it be mostly utilized towards getting the grid ready for receiving feed-in energy for renewable energy sources. Because if that capacity is not there in the rural areas, if you want to put in place an economic program of energy harvesting, you can't actually put it into grid, then actually it defeats the purpose. So we need to be getting our grid ready for that. Some comments on the capacity building grants. I think a lot has been said on the Sienza Manje, or maybe I'm not going to go into it. Salga is involved with Treasury on the board of Sienza Manje, so I think we generally agree with the comments that were made earlier. We however do think that there's no coordination between the overall grants. And again, you need a coordinated approach. There's MSIG, FMG, Sienza Manje, and many other sort of capacity building initiatives. So you add a CTAS to that. I mean, it's a lot of money that goes into that. And we don't think that is a coordinated effort in that respect. There's no account on the impact of the grant. So, you know, again, I mean, a lot of the Sienza Manje people have become operational people in the municipality. They become effective, de facto CFOs or city engineers. So you can't really see what the impact is, because the moment you take them out, I mean, and that's the point that I think Kenneth was making about the sustainability issues. And also about how do you set the agenda for how you target this capacity. I mean, it's not really clear. You know, it might be DBSA loan linked. When I had a meeting with DBSA, I mean, they indicated, well, I asked them, how do you actually get support to a municipality? And they said, well, as long as it comes from COSCA or SALGA or provincial department, we'll consider support. I mean, there should be a much more coordinated and effective way of providing the service. It's a similar point on the capacity building grants. There are five different grants from five different departments. So if you're a municipality, you're reporting to five different departments if you're accessing a lot of those grants. Again, provincial allocations are added to that, and they become, it gets further complicated. Financial management grants. I'm not going to go through these in a lot of detail. The point I must emphasize is that the water service operating subsidy. The point that we're making is that maybe we should consider. You know, we emphasized quite a bit last year, Chair, in the same forum, that these water schemes that were transferred to municipalities, and even to date, we've been trying to get information about where these water schemes are and what are the challenges. But what we know is that a lot of them are in the rural areas are beginning to fail. And we're not sure if whether it's a technical issue or whether it's a financing issue, but there are major problems with those water schemes. And we really need to get down to that. And what we were suggesting is that maybe at least the ground that's currently there being ring-fenced, I'm sure the municipality may not like it, but and not be added to the equitable share. So that we can begin seeing some improvement. And if it's not improvement, then, you know, we know that they may be not using the money for that purpose. Just an idea. EPWP, Chair, I mean, I think we've got a lot of points in here you can read, but we're not really making any substantial point except to say that, again, in the less capacitated municipalities, it's almost impossible to report on EPWP. The reporting framework is incredibly complex, and that needs to be streamlined. We have had discussions with Public Works to look at, you know, improving the system here. But in general, we do agree with the proposals that have been made in the framework, I think. to extend the reporting date for next year's budget to 15th of October, so we allow more municipalities to get into the system and start reporting on EPWP. I think previously it was 30th of June or something. So at least that gives more space to municipalities. There's been an increase in the nominal incentive amount, so that's good. And we continue with the zero threshold for rural municipalities. Zero threshold basically means that you qualify for a wage incentive from job number one. Whilst if you are in a metro or a big city, I think, you qualify for a wage incentive after a specific threshold has been achieved. So the city of Joburg must first achieve a target of maybe 5,000 jobs before they can qualify for the incentive. So it's a proposal, I think, that we discussed, I think, in this committee last year, and it continues. DORA clauses, I think we just wanted to make a specific point around the unspent funds. I think we agree with the general thrust of the return of unspent funds. We think it's correct way of going. However, I mean, there are challenges. That some of the grants are poorly designed, and we should ensure that the project registration and delays in implementation, those processes are monitored effectively by a department. Because that could result in fiscal dumping, because if the money comes in too late because of poor planning and coordination, I mean, the municipality may not, end up spending the money. So we just wanted to highlight a couple of challenges around that. Chair, I think that is my last point. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir. Still adopt the same approach like the earlier one. We'll raise comments and questions at a later stage. I will, at this stage, call upon the Department of Education. Either music or higher, whichever attachment you can decide amongst them.
I'm representing the DG of the Department of Basic Education in the presentation. We were unfortunately assigned by the Minister, so we could not make it. And thereafter, we will have a presentation by the DG of Higher Education as well. Specifically focusing on the issues linked to education in the Division of Revenue Bill. The presentation from Basic will be in three parts. Firstly, to look at the restructuring of education and the distribution of the budget, specifically perhaps with an emphasis on what's happening at national level. Secondly, the funding of the education sector, and that is where the equitable share to provinces specifically comes into play, and we also brought with Mr. Parahachi, who's normally dealing with those intergovernmental relations matters, and then also to look at the basic education conditional grants. Now, I'll try to be as quick as possible, not to spend too much time on the first part of the slides regarding the restructuring of education, but just to emphasize a few of the matters. I trust the committee is aware of the establishment of the new Department of Basic Education and Higher Education and Training after the restructuring process that we had after the last elections. And in terms of the Department of Basic Education specifically, the functions came from the current Department of Education, which actually only closed down at the end of March. These functions, three basically, it's the basic literacy and numeracy for adults, which is the Caribbean campaign, and then also all the functions related to school education. The Director General for Higher Education will later on indicate the functions related to higher education and training. Now, we have, obviously, for the 2010 MTF, as a result of the fact that the Department of Education will come to an end, relatively large exercise to split the budget of the current Department of Education so that we can fund basic education as well as higher education and training. There has been an agreed framework between the three Director Generals, that is the DG for Education, for Basic Education and Higher Education and Training, on the basis in which funds and funds were basically split. And that was also linked in to the distribution of the staff complement based on how the functions were split. It should be important to note, especially in the last bullet there, that, and that would be the case for basic as well as higher education, that there may be some budget constraints in the 2010-11 financial year and onwards, simply because none of the departments really received additional funds to perform the functions of these two new departments. The existing budget had to be split. There were minor funds provided to the Department of Higher Education and Training, but definitely not sufficient to perform everything. This will be addressed in the adjustment estimate with National Treasury during the financial year. Chairperson, I'm not going to deal with the next slide. It's just an extract of some of the key areas around the budget distribution framework, which is agreed upon, but I'm not going to go into the detail there. In terms of the restructuring also, I think then for the Department of Basic Education, what would it look like as a new department with effect from 1 April 2010? Now, the aim of that department, as you can see, focused mainly on the development and maintenance and the support of the school education system, which is important to emphasize. The programs that will be applicable as from 1 April would be the normal administration program. You can see the in brackets, the total amount applicable to each program as well. The second program will be on curriculum policy, support and monitoring. There will be a new program linked to teacher and education human resources development and management, planning, quality assessment and monitoring, and evaluation, and lastly, social responsibility. Now, perhaps just to indicate that under the two programs, curriculum policy, as well as social responsibility, one would see that the budgets for those two programs specifically are substantially more than the other programs. The reasons for that is that the conditional grants, as well as the Kariguri campaign, and the earmark allocations for the workbooks to schools are under those two programs, and therefore they have such high allocations. If one look at the next two slides, this slide we just decided to play funny tricks, just to give an indication of the key responsibilities under those programs and what they will perform. The first program, obviously, administration, as with all the other departments, simply the Minister, Deputy Minister, the Management, Corporate Services, and in the case of basic education, also national and provincial coordination, which is a separate office dealing with intergovernmental relations matters within education. Then in program two, the new program for curriculum policy support and monitoring, it will focus on curriculum implementation and monitoring, the National Curriculum Institute, curriculum and quality enhancement programs, as well as the Kariguri Literacy Project. Program 3, Teachers and Education, Human Resources Development and Management. This program will focus on all education human resource management matters, institutional development, teacher education. If you get to Program 4, which is our Planning, Quality Assessment and Monitoring and Evaluation Program, it deals with the information monitoring and evaluation, for instance, your EMIS system and some of the others, financial and physical planning and analysis, as well as educational measurements, assessments, and public examinations. The last program, Social Responsibility, deals with social inclusion in education, equity in education, health in education, and this is mainly where the two big conditional grants for school nutrition and HIV AIDS are situated. The second part, Chairperson, the funding of the education sector and the equitable share portions that go to our provincial education departments. Now there, I think the important thing is that in the second bullet one can see the amount allocated currently, as we say at this stage, since some of the provincial allocations have not been finalized 100%, we have 128.3 billion in the first year, going up to 145.6 billion in the third year over the 2010 MTF. Now these allocations so far exclude the conditional grant amounts. This is purely equitable share amounts. The allocations currently represent on average about 49% of total provincial budgets. And compensation of employees, as has been the case historically, remains the biggest portion of our provincial education department's budgets. Currently the average is around 79.9%. If you look at the next three slides, it provides some detail per province, and just note at the bottom of the next slide that these figures are still preliminary, as I indicated, some of the final budget statements must still be finalized, and these amounts exclude then the conditional grants that we will see later. So this is how we have the preliminary budget of the PEDs. You'll see as usual that KZN, Eastern Cape and Limpopo, the high ones, Gauteng also relatively high, and then the small provinces, Northern Cape, Northwest and the Free State. In terms of the economic classification, Chairperson, you can see the bulk of funding, as indicated, is on compensation of employees, where we have almost 80% of the total budget for provinces. There's a slight decline over transfers and subsidies, and part of this are being discussed with provincial education departments to get clarity on the exact reasons for those. The last slide there on the terms of the funding of the PEDs just emphasize and reflect the current funding percentages. As indicated, the average is around 49% over the MTEF, where the normal education share, if one look at the equitable share formula, is around 51%. One can therefore see that Eastern Cape, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, which is on the screen highlighted in blue, is relatively favorable. Those allocations in those provinces for education are 51% and above. Then we have Northwest and Free State, which is almost on par. But the concerns are in Gauteng, KZN, Northern Cape and the Western Cape, where they are all below 49%. In some cases as low as 46, as in the Western Cape, and also in Gauteng. Chairperson, if we can move to the conditional grants, the third and last part of the presentation. The conditional grants for basic education are the National School Nutrition Program, the HIV/AIDS Life Skills Program. We then also have the Technical Schools Recapitalization Grant and a fourth grant which only kicks in the 2011-12 financial year for the Naledi schools. Now the school nutrition program, the allocations for that program, as you can see, for the 3 years there, 3.6 billion going up to almost 5 billion in the third year. And I must also indicate that there's additional funds that earmark allocations to the national department, specifically for coordination, monitoring and leadership by the department there, 13.3 million going up to, or actually going down to 9 million in the third year. The reason why it's slightly higher in the first year is as the department is busy with the implementation of these grants also in secondary schools, and to ensure that all those things happen smoothly. One would also have experienced in the past financial year that it was slightly higher than normal to ensure proper implementation. In terms of the HIV/AIDS life skills grant, the three allocations are reflected there, 188, 199, 209 billion rand. It must be emphasized that there is no provision for coordination monitoring in those grants, but that is funded out of the department's baseline, and separate amounts are made available within the normal project allocations of the department. Thirdly, the technical schools recapitalization grant. That over the 3 years amount to 490 million. That in the first year, the 80 million, then it's going up to 200, going up to 210 million. In the current financial year, the department also had 4 million for planning purposes, which have been utilized almost in full. There's also some money available, as indicated there, specifically also for the coordination and monitoring of the grant. Then the last grant, the one for the Naledi schools, as I indicated, that will only be applicable 2011-12, so therefore planning is still in place for that one. The first year it will be 70 million going up to 100 million, just to indicate perhaps that there's currently around 500 Dina Levy schools. In terms of the three grants that's currently active, Chairperson, if I can then quickly just run through a few areas on each of those grants. National School Nutrition, as we all know, to enhance the learning capacity in schools and to improve access to education. The purpose of the grant is to provide nutritious meals, which is important to targeted learners. This hopefully would enhance the learning capacity and improve the access to education, as I indicated. And on the output side, it is important that it should be nutritious meals. And there is a stronger emphasis on the side of the department to look at the kind of meals and menus provided by provinces to ensure that it is proper and nutritious. The allocations to provinces, here I think the majority of funding, although the grant is allocated in terms of the number of learners that participate in the grant, one sees a very much similar trend as with the equitable share, that the majority of funding goes to KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape and Limpopo. The current funding in 2010-11, I think just to mention there, is for the quintile 1 to 3 primary schools, as well as quintile 1 and 2 secondary schools. In the 2019 current financial year, implementation start in quintile 1 secondary schools, and in 2010-11, quintile 2 secondary schools will be added. If one look at the increase to 2011-12, which is relatively sharp, you'll see almost a 900 million rand increase there, that is for 2011-12 to include quintile 3 secondary schools, so they will be added in the second year, and then the trend is slightly more equal, going up only around 7.6% to the third year, because then things stabilize, it's normally inflationary increase, although there is an additional 120.4 million in the third year for the grant, but it will not be expanded further according to the current plan. Jefferson, on the grant framework conditions, I think just this emphasizes what I already indicated, and if one look at the minimum feeding requirements, just important to note that the feeding cost at secondary schools are slightly higher than those of primary. The learners are a bit bigger, they need a bit more, and therefore we have a slightly higher meal cost on average on at secondary schools. The number of learners, perhaps if I can just mention that, that's currently being fed is 6.4 million in the primary schools and approximately 806,000 in the quintile 1 secondary schools. There are then the HIV AIDS grant. Now, in the HIV AIDS grant, I think the emphasis on the outcome statement that's reflected at the lower part of the slide, I think the important thing to note is that there's a slightly broader focus than just the life skills emphasis that's been there in the past. In the second bullet, one can also see now that there's care and support provided to learners, educators, and staff infected and affected by HIV and AIDS. There's also a revised framework that the unit in the department is working on, and this will be available for consideration in the department by around June, July 2010. On the second slide, there's some of the output indicators. I'm not going to go through them in a lot of detail. One can see there, and I think the last one also, which is very important, is that they are also now working on learner and teaching support material for deaf and blind learners in special schools, which have not been there in the past. The key outcome indicators are reflected on the last next slide for HIV specifically, and I think one can only emphasize there that those are very much in line with the specific grant purposes and statements as we had previously. In terms of the conditions of the grant, there's just an indication of more or less how the grant is distributed. If one look at the budgeted allocations, the percentages allowed for the various items, and management and support, which is around 7% within each province. Please note that the provinces can change on these percentages slightly, depending on what the circumstances within a specific province is. The Technical Schools Recapitalization Grant, this grant, which is a new grant kicking in 1 April, is mainly meant to improve the conditions of technical schools. There will be 100 schools targeted throughout the country in order to modernize them to meet the teaching requirements in the technical and vocational fields and to increase the number of suitable qualified technically skilled graduates from these schools. One can see there the various activities for which the grant will be utilized, the redesigning of all the various workshops that we find in these schools, the refurbishing of those workshops, installation of new machinery and equipment where appropriate, and the training and upskilling of teachers, especially in new trends and practical skills and technical subjects. The grant allocation principle, chairperson, as one can see there, I think the third bullet, the most important one, there are various areas for which the grant will be utilized, such as the acquisition of land and buildings. There you can see for one workshop, on average, around 500,000 rand. Equipment and machinery per school, renovations where appropriate, and then also the training of teachers. The next two slides give an indication of allocations per province, and so I must just emphasize here that there's been in the past year, as I indicated, the 4 million rand that could have been utilized by the department for planning purposes for this grant. Now, in that process, there's been an audit also of all technical schools, specifically to determine the actual needs per school and then also per province. Now, during this process, there's been audit results that unfortunately only came out in January. So this slide specifically reflects the outcome of those audit results. Now, up to now, the distribution of the grant, which is reflected in the next slide, has been done according to the equitable share as a preliminary measure. And there are discussions ongoing with the National Treasury to probably change the distribution as it is currently reflected to reflect the audit results as on slide 24. One would see, if one look at the two slides, that there's quite a substantial difference in how the funds will be distributed. If one look at, for instance, slide 24, we see that the majority of funding will be for Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN and Limpopo, and if I can reflect on slide 25, one would see a total different distribution of the funds. The Gauteng will still be high, but they will definitely not be the highest if I look at the audited outcome on slide 24. So just to emphasize those and to indicate that there may be a change depending on the negotiations and discussions with National Treasury on the allocations per province. I think I'm going to cut myself a bit short. There's the last slide on number 26, just on the monitoring and management of the grant by the department. Just to emphasize that there's a project steering committee which consists of officials from the national department as well as provincial education departments that will manage and monitor the project. They will meet on a quarterly basis, and there will also be information sharing between all provincial education departments in that public steering committee to ensure that we have a successful utilization of this call. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all from our side.
Thank you, sir. May we take higher education?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be very quick. The purpose of this presentation is really just to bring to the attention of the committee both the fact that there are indeed now two educations, the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Higher Education and Training, and to reflect on how that impacts upon the division of revenue, because there is a new conditional grant and the background to that needs to be explained. To just go very quickly through the background, the President established two departments from what was the Department of Education and the National Macro Organizational of the State Project. And the Department of Higher Education and Training inherited functions, or is in the process still actually, of receiving functions from the Department of Education, which closes at the end of this financial year, more or less, and the Department of Labor. So from the Department of Education, we've taken over the functions in law of adult education, post-basic adult education. So the Kurigudi campaign remains with the Department of Basic Education. But we've also taken responsibility for vocational education and training, including the FET colleges and university education. Just a comment in terms of those three functions, that university education has always been a national function. It hasn't had any provincial competencies. But vocational education and training, particularly the FET colleges, have always been a concurrent function, as has adult education and training. Skills development, there's a whole range of skills development legislation that was located within the Department of Labor. The assignation of that legislation took effect on the 1st of November. So we're still on the process of receiving those functions and staff and budgets and some clarification of that. There was a comprehensive process with the Department of Education to agree on the splits. With the Department of Labor, we were less successful in agreeing on splits, and in the end, Treasury made recommendation in terms of the splits. And as indicated in the previous presentation, and I'm sure all departments say this, is that we are going to be experiencing challenges in terms of the budget. I'm going to move quickly because I know it's late and there's other people who still have to present. But to give you a summary, I know that there's a public perception quite correctly that a large portion of the national budget goes towards education. The total figure is about 19.9% if you look at provincial and national figures together with additional allocations for skills training in departments. Our department appears to get the lion's share of that in terms of receiving over 32 billion. But what we want to show with this slide is that most of the money that comes in goes immediately out. They're a bit of a post office, so it's sort of in and out money. But the first money that goes out is a collection of money that goes for direct charges for the CETA funding and the NSF, so that's about 8.4 billion, which leaves us with a balance of 23.7 billion. And then there's a range of transfers that go immediately out. For universities, it's 17.5 billion. Then for the National Skills Fund, 51 million. Then there's a range of public entities, including the Council for Higher Education and African Qualifications Authority, which take 1.9 million, including the NSFAS. The amount that is critical for this presentation here is the FET conditional grant, and that's 3.7 billion. The amount that's been allocated increased between the medium-term budget policy statement and the final budget as on account of an appeal that we made for improvements in condition of service, and that amount was allocated. So in the end, the departments have the direct charges and the transfers that move out, and then we have about 228 million for compensation of employees. And at the very end, the department has about 163 million for all of its projects, for all of its operational expenditure, for all of its costs. So it's a very lean department. I'm going to, as I said, move quite quickly. The allocation of that operational and compensation of employees is across different branches, one of which is administration. The second is the Human Resource Development Planning and Monitoring Coordination, which includes the Secretariat for the HRD SA, which is going to be launched by the Deputy President as a council on the 30th of March. It includes the branch that runs university education, the branch that supports vocational and continuing education, which is FET colleges, and the branch that supports skills development, which includes monitoring the CETAs, as well as the new work that's happening in terms of artisan development. So if I come to the slide which is of most interest to you, is there is one conditional grant, a Schedule 4 conditional grant, that's coming into place on the 1st of April 2010, and it's specifically the grant for further education and training colleges. And the background to this is that in terms of the FET Act, the colleges are, well, according to the Constitution, FET is a concurrent function, and the FET Act is primary responsibility to the MECs. One of the concerns is that now that the President has created a new system of post-school education and training and has assigned the legislation for FET to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, it's important that we constitute all post-school education and training in one coherent post-school national education and training system. And the policy imperatives for that are very persuasive, and I'm happy to go through those arguments with the committee. But in the medium-term budget policy statement, the Minister of Finance indicated that there was an intention to move the colleges to the national function. That will require an amendment to a schedule to the Constitution, which we're working on with the Presidency. But the Minister of Finance indicated in November last year that what he would do would be to take the baseline, to the extent that that's established, and I'll come back to that, for expenditure on the FET colleges and ring fence it and earmark it within the provincial equitable share, which would then be governed by a conditional grant. So previously the money that goes to colleges would have been simply a simple part of the provincial equitable share, but in pursuit of the policy objectives, which are the national imperative of having a strong FET sector, that portion of the provincial equitable share has now been ring-fenced and been paid, made part of a conditional grant that comes through our budget directly back to the provincial budget with very strict conditionalities, which I'll go through. So the purpose of that grant is to ensure the successful transfer of the college function to national. As I've indicated in the MCA framework, we've been allocated in 2010-11 3.7, 3.8 million. billion. That includes the recent allocation of about 410 million this year for us to conclude negotiations for improvement in conditions of service of college lecturers in line with the OSD that's been implemented for their colleagues in schools. There's more complications to that. The one thing that I want to indicate is that Treasury has been very helpful in helping us establish the baseline, but we believe, and I think we're supported by Treasury in that and by some province, well, some officials within provinces, that to establish the baseline will be an ongoing task. I'm visiting provinces at the moment and meeting with all of the college principals, college councils, the officials that support the colleges, as well as senior officials with more generic functions. And in one province I visited this year, I was told that one of the problems is that the baseline adjustment that was directed by National Treasury in 2009 towards the conclusion of the recapitalization program was never effected in that province. So the baseline is a little bit suspect, which in simple terms means that during the recapitalization process, many provinces shifted funds away from FET colleges, and now we want them to shift them back so that, in fact, the colleges are properly resourced. In terms of how that 3.7 billion is distributed across the provinces, you'll see that that is given in page 37 of your Act. What's interesting about page 37 and the allocation across the provinces is that you'll see it doesn't necessarily match the demographics of the provinces. What it will reflect is the level of historic development of FET colleges in those provinces, which is uneven. If we want to take forward the FET project so that it serves all South Africans, you'll see that there will need to be inequitable growth across the different provinces in order to create the kind of access that we want to see for young people. The second thing in terms of a conditional grant is that we're busy establishing a MINMEC for higher education and training, so that the governance structure with the minister relating to NSCs will be in place, and our first meeting is on March the 19th. Now, the whole grant management and monitoring is in accordance with the necessary legislation, in particular Section Part 2 of the Act, Sections 8 and 9. But you'll see that the framework for the conditional grant is on page 114 of your Division of Revenue Bill, and that's spells out the obligations on both the receiving department as well as the dispersing authority. And the framework for the grant includes setting out enrollment targets, some of the infrastructural and capital expenditures such as ICT and management information systems. It also requires that provincial education departments, as long as they are the primary line function responsible, must maintain the current value of funding and resource requirements. And that it also gives makes obligation that the provincial department must transfer the funds to the relevant college. The colleges and the employing authorities, when the FET Act was passed, and the colleges need, in fact, to have the resources in order to fund purposes such as the payroll function. So we do have a provincial implementation protocol. It has been sent to all NECs, and it will be discussed at the MINMEC on the 20th of March. And the department has particular obligations in terms of providing a framework and monitoring the grant and consolidating and reporting to Treasury. So all of that is in place, both in terms of the grant framework in page 114, as well as in the protocol that will be signed between the national and provincial departments. We are going to be paying the grant in two tranches, and all of that is covered in the framework. So, Chairperson, what we've tried to demonstrate here is that this is a new grant, that it's a result of new policy imperatives, that it's been established on the basis of current baselines, which still need to be checked, that there's consultative processes with the provinces to ensure that we have a framework that's workable, that's in accordance with the Act. And into the future, as the colleges become firmly part of the national post-school school education and training system. We will then, it will probably be moving more firmly into the national portion of the Division of Revenue. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kathy. We'll take the last presentation and then zoom into questions.
Thank you.
That will be Case Law Project.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, for giving the Aid Bill Project an opportunity to present here today. I just want to make an apology up front that this is the first time we've presented to this committee or on this subject material. So although we've made many submissions to Parliament before, we're entering a new area of our work. And so if what I say is inaccurate or naive at times, I apologize and we'll hopefully do better in future. So there are several issues that have occurred over the last year which have made us concerned and decided that we need to focus on how money is being allocated and being spent, and hence our interest in presenting to this committee. First of all, there was the Free State moratorium on antiretroviral treatment from November 2008 to March 2009. Recently, the Eastern Cape Department of Health announced that it had run out of money due to the unexpected cost of the OSD. Then Limpopo province at the end of 2008-2009 financial year had 400 million rand in debt. In addition, we've been collecting a database of incidents related to the antiretroviral treatment rollout in the public health system. And it's become clear to us that most of these incidents are a consequence of a health system under stress that either doesn't have sufficient funds or the funds aren't being managed as well as they need to be. And beyond HIV, we've come across systematic cases of non-HIV drugs being out of stock, including insulin, for example. Furthermore, at the end of, I think it was 2008, former Minister of Health Barbara Hogan commissioned a set of reports known as the Integrated Service Team reports, one for each province, and if I'm not mistaken, one for the National Department as well. And we've had sight of two of these reports, for Limpopo and Free State, and they paint a very difficult picture of the management of health in the provinces. And so we're hoping that this committee can help in trying to rectify those problems. Incidentally, those reports have not been made public, which is one of the issues that I will be raising here. By the way, my presentation is an abbreviated slideshow of a handout of a submission that we made. Okay. So the first issue I want to raise is the issue of a parliamentary budget office. I believe it has been raised here today already, but it's provided for in Section 15 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. Obviously, we understand that this is the first year that this committee is sitting in respect of that act, so it's going to take time to get all the ducks in a row. But we think that this office is particularly important because Parliament is surely ill-equipped for the mammoth task envisaged by the act without this additional research capacity being given to it. Yet, if you look in budget, in vote 2 for the 2010-11 parliamentary budget, There's no allocation for the PBO. Maybe we haven't looked in the right place, but as far as we can tell, the PBO isn't yet budgeted for. So we're hoping that this is something that will be corrected by latest next year. Then there are several other issues. The occupation-specific dispensations, the OSDs, which has been causing a lot of stress for the health system. As you're aware, it was a nationally negotiated increase of both nurses and doctors. Yet it's financed, it's expected to be financed out of the provincial equitable shares. And to date, we still aren't entirely sure of the exact extent of the cost of the OSDs, and consequently we're seeing situations where the Eastern Cape runs out of money because it doesn't have sufficient budget to pay the OSD. We've had reports today that Gauteng is under a lot of stress. Gauteng Health Department is under a lot of stress because of unforeseen cost of the OSD. And currently the additional allocations to cover the OSDs are distributed through equitable share formulas, which we feel is probably not an adequate way of dealing with it at this point. We've got some suggestions on how the OSD could be dealt with better, but we can deal with those in question time if the committee wants to look into that. The next issue is one of provincial debt. Now, according to the Integrated Service Team reports for Limpopo and Free State Departments of Health, only cash flow is being reported in the accounting systems and not accrual of expenses, which, as you're aware, is not the way it's really supposed to be done according to South African accounting practices. And consequently,